staying healthy while you work. You may not think much about what sitting at a desk all day is doing to your health, but as healthcare costs continue to rise and companies look to pinch more pennies, some have discovered that a small investment in workplace wellness can reap rewards for both worker and employer. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll learn just what workplace wellness really is and how you, no matter where you work, can take steps to get a little healthier even as you get your job done. With me in the studio, Tom Downing. He's director of MaineMed's Workplace Wellness Program. Also in the studio, Phil DeRusso. He's the Worksite Health Specialist at MCD Public Health. We'd like to hear from you as well. What steps are you taking to stay healthy at work? Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Battling the high cost of healthcare while you work. This is MaineCalling.
Broadcast of MaineCalling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Packard Judd Kay, providing strategic marketing consulting, communications, research, and training services online at PackardJuddKay.com. And by Maine Audubon, the people conserving Maine's wildlife, for everyone. Learn more at MaineAudubon.org.
Welcome to MaineCalling. I'm Keith Shortall. You're probably familiar with the idea of workplace wellness. The shift in recent decades away from ashtrays on every desk to ergonomic workstations and stress management programs now lives under this umbrella of wellness. And it's not just about making work a friendlier, happier place. It's also about saving money on reduced absences, increased productivity, and of course, lower healthcare costs. Some would say it's a classic win-win. Others would say it's a slippery slope that penalizes hard workers who happen to be overweight or who have inherited a health problem from a distant aunt or uncle. Today we'll get into all of that. We want to hear from you as well. 1-800-399-3566 to the number to join the conversation. My guest today, Philip DeRusso. He's the Maine CDC Cardiovascular Health Program, and he is their worksite health specialist. And Tom Downing, director of MaineMed's Workplace Wellness Program. Welcome to MaineCalling, both of you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Let's start with you, Tom. Let's start at the beginning here. We think we know what wellness programs are, but how would you define what wellness means today?
Well, I think in many situations, it's an individual belief or observation. I mean, you go up on Congress Street and you interview 100 people and ask them to define wellness for you, and you'll probably get 100 different answers. So it tends to be very individualized. I think from an employer perspective, as we've seen over the last few decades, health promotion and wellness has really evolved to be very holistic, meaning that we're not only concerned about the physical health and well-being of individuals, but also in terms of the psychological, mental health and well-being.
It seems like it started off, at least my recollection of how I learned about it was that it was this sort of touchy-feely thing about trying to introduce people to the notion that their employers cared about their well-being. It seems to have morphed into a much more nuts and bolts, we're going to urge you to stop smoking so that we can save money on our health care costs. Is that an unfair analysis of part of how it's been perceived?
Well, I certainly wouldn't disregard that analysis. I think part of what you're talking about is that over time, as healthcare costs have risen dramatically in our country, employers tend to be the entities that they're paying for that in many different ways. And so I think as cost is consumed more and more and more of their operating expense, they've become much more sensitized to it. The other thing that's happened, quite frankly, and Phil and I talk about this, is we felt like the last two or three decades we've really been doing a good job in terms of trying to encourage people to get healthier and more active. And in some cases, we've been successful. But in other cases, if you look at national data on obesity as an example or physical inactivity, I mean, a lot of those metrics are somewhat discouraging and some level scary for us. And so I think there are some issues that are taking – that are coming front and center that are driving cost, impact on, as you mentioned earlier, absenteeism. The newer model that we're looking at now is the issue around presenteeism, i.e. an employee comes to work, but for whatever set of reasons, whether it's financial, relations, medical, they're not 100% productive. And in many cases, that productivity may be impacted by their health.
Perhaps.
So it has evolved. It has evolved.
Perhaps a Facebookectomy could help that.
Yeah.
Social media.
Yeah. Phil?
And a lot of times there's, you know, businesses are really looking at health of employees as a business strategy. And as you mentioned, you know, really it is a win-win when it comes down to it. You know, both the employer and the employee in many instances share that cost of the health insurance premium. Mm-hmm. So if those premiums continue to escalate, both the employer and the employee have a skin in the game to take some action to improve that. And the fundamentals of it is really improving individual health.
You know? And so is it also, from where you sit, is it also a public health issue that people spend a lot of their time at work? And so why not focus on these major issues of obesity, diabetes, and others at a place where people spend time?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. Adults spend a third of their day at the work site. So what a great place to engage people in a healthy lifestyle, especially where the employer can win and the employee can win. You know, it's a no-brainer, really. Mm-hmm.
And we're not just talking about places where people sit at a desk, the standard, the traditional sedentary work day. I mean, wellness can take place on a farm or in a cherry picker.
It takes place, you know, we use the term employer, but an employer really means a school, a for-profit business, a nonprofit organization, a farm. Wellness is everywhere. And so, you know, we have a unique opportunity to really capture people during the workday to help engage them in a healthier lifestyle. Mm-hmm.
This started off, though, as a voluntary thing. It was sort of introduced very gingerly to employers, probably employees, anticipating, I'm guessing, that it might be perceived as, uh-oh, you know, what's next? My boss is telling me I'm too fat. And were they is that why it was introduced so sort of in that way, Phil?
It comes in many ways, I think. You know, employers are, in Maine especially, I think they're well in tune with their greatest asset are their people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, genuinely, you know, when I talk to employers, they're looking at ways to how can they take care of their greatest asset? You know, their people, the ones that deliver the products and services for them. And so they want them to be able to perform at a high level. And so both personally and professionally. So I think the challenge comes down to communication sometimes. You know, how does an employer present this to their employees so that the employees understand, gosh, you know what? They are doing this for me and it is the right thing to do.
We will get to some sort of nuts and bolts about how to do wellness in a workplace and things that work, things that don't work. But I guess I will defer now to Lisa, who is contacting us on Facebook, who writes, it does strike me as paternalistic and condescending. The whole employer-based healthcare often appears more an instrument of control than investment. Tom Downing is, I guess this is still what we're lingering on, is this, trying to convince workers that it's not just about saving money. It's about creating a healthy workforce.
It's an interesting argument. I mean, if we talk with different employers, depending on their size, their sector, who their leadership is, their corporate philosophies, certainly in some cases, depending on the corporate culture, employees may feel like it's being imposed on them for the wrong reasons. I agree with Phil 100%. I think those employers, let's take L.L. Bean as an example, who has probably been in the state of Maine one of the very early adopters around worksite health program, well over 20 years. Well, they've always been very transparent. They've said to their employees, this is the rationale. This is why we are encouraging and supporting you, creating a culture that is health-related. Now, relatively easy for them to do that because of their product, you know, outdoors, and they're very kind of focused on people being healthy and well and using their products. There are examples in the literature of some employers who've been very dictatorial. I think out in the Midwest, there was a company that said, well, we're not hiring smokers, and it was considered to be legal. So I think we can't cast a broad net over everybody and saying, well, that's their intention, that they're going to be dictatorial and say it's either our way or the highway. I think the other reality is just looking at healthcare cost. I mean, if you look at claims data, like both Phil and I do from time to time, what's happening with an organization and how employees and families using their healthcare plans, it's not unusual to see 20 to 30% of their cost being related to lifestyle habits.
So can you point to an L.L. Bean, for example, and cite statistics that say that that 20-year experiment and that groundbreaking wellness effort paid off?
Well, I can't speak for them professionally. Just what I observe, I think we'd be fun to have Susan Tufts, who there's wellness manager, be in sometime and chat with you and your audience about what they've seen. We do know there's some pretty solid literature.
Right. We have L.L. Bean, and, you know, I'll sort of cite a business up in Vassalboro, Durotham Window, York Spiral Stairs. Tim Downing, who's probably listening in today, he's not to be confused with Tom next to me, but, there's a company with 50 to 60 employees. They've been doing wellness for 4 or 5 years now. And so, you know, they're a company that, you know, they don't have a whole large pool of people to pull from, but they've seen such great returns on investments. Dollar figures, you know, I really couldn't, you know, pull them off from the back of my brain. But, you know, their health insurance premiums have been stabilized. And that's a company, they make high-end windows and staircases. And outside of their building is a garden that their employees all work together and are able to take some of those vegetables home, you know, so to help increase fruit and vegetable consumption. And Tim, who is the owner of this company, I mean, gosh, when you look at wellness and when you see a successful program, it starts at the top, and he's a true leader when it comes to that.
It's probably not a difficult argument to make to say, look, if you have a workforce of unhealthy, overweight people battling chronic disease, that they will cost you more money. So we don't have to really make that argument. I think what the debate comes down to is how much where do you draw the line between here's an incentive to encourage you to live a healthier lifestyle versus penalizing you for having, hereditary high blood pressure, for example.
Well, there's definitely, I mean, when it comes down to that, Keith, is there's laws that protect employees, you know, from that. But what I, you know, a big part of, you know, from the employer perspective, you know, an employer's role really is to create that environment that supports an employee to live that healthy, vibrant lifestyle they want to live. Ultimately, the employer can't and is not going to be successful if they say, guess what, Tom, you got to start exercising today. You got to start running marathons. That's not going to help the employee change their behavior. But if the employer could take the stance of, gosh, how do we help people, enable them so they become self-leaders in their own health and take charge of their own health, put in policies and programs that really support them, that's when you're going to start to see people really improve their health. And I think that's where, you know, from our standpoint, from Worksite Wellness folks, you know, that's what we're trying to encourage employers to do.
And how are employers embracing this? Is it catching on?
Well, I think in certain areas it is. Again, the part of the driver for employers taking a much more comprehensive look at it is cost. That's no secret. I mean, if we look at our healthcare system in this country, I mean, there's constant debate about should we be a single payer system? Should it be multiple? I mean, all that. There's so many layers of discussion that go on. And I think the groups that I'm really interested in, Phil and I share this interest, is the small business. Because if you talk with a small employer, let's say under 25 lives, the whole issue of return on investment, if they put in X dollars, they're going to get Y in return, is really something that it's almost impossible for them to measure. But if you talk to them about this notion that they can visually see the relationship between health and someone who's productive or isn't productive, they instantly know that. I mean, I was thinking about an example this morning. You own a variety store. You walk in at 7:30 in the morning and your cashier is not there. You're it. So I think there's a heightened level of sensitivity for the smaller employer. Not that it doesn't happen at the bigger, but I think the smaller employers have a heightened sense of awareness when there's poor health, poor productivity, other kinds of health-related issues for someone. And I think that's a whole other area that we all have an interest in right now,
the little guy. And we'll talk about some of the specifics, certain things that employers can do that are effective, that really do improve the health of their employees. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions as well. Please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
This week on Maine Watch, a tough issue for so many Maine families. At what point should an elderly driver give up his or her driver's license? There's renewed attention to this issue, which is especially difficult since this is a rural state with an aging population. Should Maine's laws be changed? How should doctors and loved ones talk about this issue? What kind of resources out there and what is lacking for senior drivers? We hope you'll join us for the next Maine Watch.
Thursday evening at 8 and Friday evening at 9 on MPBN television and Friday afternoon at 12:30 here on MPBN radio.
It is a self-evident truth that things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other.
Daniel Day-Lewis has Abraham Lincoln in the new Steven Spielberg film. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Tony Kushner, who spent years writing the screenplay for Lincoln. He also won a Pulitzer for his play, Angels in America. Join us.
Tonight at 7 o'clock. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by the Clean Bedroom, Organic Bedding Showroom and Kittery, helping Mainers sleep healthy since 2004. Also in Portland at Furnitura and online at thecleanbedroom.com. And by Goodwill Industries of Northern New England, accepting donations at 17 stores throughout Maine. Information on donation centers at goodwillnne.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about workplace wellness. With me in the studio, Phil DeRusso. He's with the Maine CDC Cardiovascular Health Program. He's their worksite health specialist. And Tom Downing, director of Maine Med's Workplace Wellness Program. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling, or you can post to our Facebook page. We're going to play a clip for you now from a YouTube series that we were tipped off to this morning by a friend of the show, Alex Steed. The series is called U-Cube, and it follows the work adventures of Peter, who works for a company called Gobblers. We have a link to the series on our Facebook page. Here's a little clip of Peter talking about workplace wellness.
Hey, I'm Peter. I do a video blog, and I work at Gobbler, and Derek's my boss. All right, thanks.
Another thing I like about ankle circles is they get you out of your chair.
It's okay to stand up at work, people. Your butt isn't glued to that seat.
Okay, so the best way to do ankle circles is to hold the elevated leg with both hands, with your fingers interlocked, because that'll improve the leg's stability, and it also improves your balance. So let's go ahead and switch legs.
Hey, Derek.
What's cracking, Pete Sickle?
Just shooting a video for this blog I started about offersizing.
Is that office and exercising combined into one word?
Yes, it is.
Dynamite. Love that. Something for Gobbler?
No, actually, it's just a little side project of mine.
It's a weird one. But hey, I dig it.
So, a little levity there. Wellness is still the subject of, you know, some joking around workplaces. At other places, it's very serious. Here at MPBN, we'll disclose, we have a growing group of people we call the standers who are choosing to stand at their workstations instead of sit all day. Phil DeRusso, what's the benefit there?
Well, there's recent research that's showing sitting for long periods of time could have a drastic impact on our health, and not in a good way. You know, even for folks that exercise on a regular basis, if they come in and sit for 8 hours a day, they're almost reversing all that good stuff that they've been doing for themselves. Not only possibly creating other issues, you know, between back pain and other overuse injuries too from sitting too long. But, you know, just getting out of your seat. So here's a cue, folks, if you're listening and you're sitting at your desk now, take a stretch break. Get up, move around, and, you know, try to make this a regular part of your day. It pays off and then some.
But you have to do it right. For example, we have hard cement floors under the carpeting, so some have chosen to put softer mats down to lessen the stress. Yeah. And some prefer, some say that standing is painful for them, so they don't do it. But what was interesting about this, what my observation was in our own office was, you know, there was one person who did it, and another person came along and was sort of curious about it. And then suddenly, you know, now there are maybe five and growing. So that's kind of how it happens in a workplace, isn't it, Tom Downing?
Well, I think certainly peer support can go in different directions.
You can call it peer pressure. It's okay.
Yeah. hopefully when those kinds of things happen that it's a positive direction and people understand that and take advantage of it. I mean, that's one of the things that we're seeing now is the whole use of social media within worksite. I mean, there are actually vendors out there right now who are producing or developing tools that worksite wellness programs can use to engage employees on Facebook or Twitter or whatever it may be. And some of them are using team competition as a methodology to encourage people to lose weight or start exercising. And I think as long as it's done in – there needs to be a fun factor to it. But also it's done so that people don't get overly competitive with one another. It's done in a positive way. That I think that that's a good thing. But peer pressure on with any – pick any subject can be an effective tool for changing and sustaining certain kinds of behaviors. So I think it can be done positively.
And we talked before the break. You were saying that some employers were reluctant because of the upfront cost of some wellness programs. But you don't have to build an indoor track or give away free health club memberships or free massages or that. You can just sort of say, hey, you know, go to the gym or take some time to go exercise or get up from your desk. Or I mean, what are some inexpensive things that employers can do that would qualify as wellness?
Well, again, I think the list is growing. I mean, yesterday somebody sent me an app that you could put into your smartphone that every 20 minutes it would tell you to get up and stretch. And I've seen those before. So I think there's – the sky is pretty much the limit. For me, a lot of times it comes down to make things that are simplistic, things that are doable, things that you can replicate, things that don't create barriers for you. I mean, a simple idea of getting out of your chair and walking around your office. Instead of tweeting or instead of emailing your colleague who's two doors down from you, get up out of your chair and go down. Use your community resources. I mean, we have parks. I mean, Back Bay, I think, is a great example of a community-based resource that probably gets the most use of any walking trail in the entire state. I mean, is there ever a time that you drive down there or walk down there where there's not somebody using it?
And we talked earlier, we were talking about small businesses, and in Skowhegan, in particular, what was neat up there is a group of employers got together and they mapped out walking routes around the community. They printed those walking maps and they handed them out to all the businesses. They came up with times for group walks, and so they invited the folks in the community, but also the employees that worked at those businesses to go and, you know, utilize those walking routes.
Yeah,
low cost, high effective way to get people engaged with activity and really bring the community together as well.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's bring in Stephen, who's calling from Waldoboro. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. Great show. I am calling because two friends of mine who are independent workers, one coordinates bicycling events out in Portland, one of them is a video editor, both engage in walking at their workstations. One uses a treadmill, electrically run treadmill, and the other has a stand in place, hydraulically operated sort of pedal device that he walks up and down on. And I think those are, if you can't get out with your coworkers and walk, I mean, you should pull yourself away from your workstation all day. But that's a great way of, you know, getting some exercise, and it really helps, you know, their backs and all kinds of other health issues. But, you know, the woman on the treadmill says she puts in about 3 miles a day, mm-hmm. which is pretty...
Sometimes my job seems like I'm on a treadmill, but I've never actually been on a treadmill before. That's
about
interesting.
Like 1 mile an hour, she basically just keeps lightly moving back and forth. She's not like walking briskly. She's walking just keeping her body in motion, mm-hmm. and it stopped all kinds of back issues she had and other health issues. That she
yeah, it's interesting. The technology, interesting mm-hmm. ideas in terms mm-hmm. of. Moving even beyond standing. I thought standing was the cutting edge, but no, it's yeah. treadmills now. And we also have, there are the inflatable sort of balls that you mm-hmm. can sit on also mm-hmm. that's good for your core.
Yep. Right. It forces you to maintain a better posture while you're sitting at your desk, where sometimes where it's much easier to, when you're at a seat and you're hunched over, if you're on the ball, you're sitting the wrong way, you're going on the floor.
Right, right. right.
Well, some companies also have put in stairwell programs, where if you've got two or three stories in your building, encouraging employees to use the stairwells as opposed to the elevators. Some companies have taken I can think of Anthem out on Gannett Drive in South Portland. They had employees who had kind of artistic background do paintings in their stairwells to make it more inviting. They pipe music into their stairwells. I've seen some companies that have done caloric. If you go X number of steps, you burn X number of calories. And again, that's a very inexpensive way. It encourages people to take the stairs as opposed to the elevator. And for me, it's one of those low-cost tools that can really encourage people to be active while they're on the job.
We'll go to Fred in Portland in a moment, but first to Bangor and Garrett with another technology development. Hi, Garrett.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi, I just wanted to share a program that I had been using for a while. It's called WorkRave, R-A-V-E, and it's a free application that you run on your PC, and it will even lock your keyboard after a while, so you have to take that walk instead of just waiting for your smartphone app to tell you to do it.
I see. So it won't even work unless you get up.
Your computer's yelling at you. Get up and move.
Yeah, I have a keyboard like that too, but it's not supposed to be like that. But anyway, all right, Garrett, thanks for
great idea.
Thanks for calling. All right, to Fred in Portland. Hi, Fred.
Yeah. Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Yeah. Actually, it seems like some of the question that I had your guests have addressed already, but I'm wondering about some of the folks who might be disinclined to participate in wellness programs and what kinds of specific strategies could be used to really pull them in and make some real meaningful behavior change. Because, I mean, I guess you look at the epidemiology of it and there still seems to be, I mean, as your guests are well aware, that there's still some serious health issues that a lot of folks have. And that there are, it seems like a lot of the wellness programs are kind of self-selecting and get people in who might be more inclined to participate. And there's still a vast population out there of folks who wouldn't think of going to the gym. And again, I think your guests have addressed a number of other strategies that have been used to try and get them, draw them in. But are there any others that, kind of really promote behavior change?
Yeah, how do you encourage those who may be most reticent to take part?
Fred brings up a key point when working with employers. Sometimes you have the resistance from folks who are they don't want the employer to be doing this, or they don't feel like it's the place of the employer to intrude on their health. And sometimes it takes small steps to engage them. And one of the things that we encourage employers to do is really to develop a wellness committee or a wellness team, which is made up of and reflective of the workforce. And it's always good to include folks who may be resistant or may not be doing all what they should be doing to be healthy, let's say, and get them involved to help them or get their input onto what would be helpful. What are some things that we could do to engage? And ultimately, I think the long-term goal is where for an employer to create a culture where, we do health. We might make windows. We might, sell products and services, but we're involved in health. And so when you create that culture, it's what we do around here. And over time, those barriers come down. That resistance starts to come down for folks, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take another short break when we come back. More of your comments and questions. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, a soaring number of Americans are stuck with part-time jobs. It's keeping costs down for companies, but it's crippling the middle class. We'll dig in. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
That's tonight at midnight here on MPBN Radio. As you know, many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on the MPBN radio service. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting MPBN, either on MPBN radio or on MPBN television, please visit our website, mpbn.net. Click on Business Support to find more information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information. Or you can call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine. Coming up at 1 o'clock on MPBN Radio, it's Your World with Amy Goodman, host and executive producer of Democracy Now! That's here on MPBN Radio after Maine Calling.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, getting healthy or healthier while you work. With me in the studio, Philip DeRusso. He's with the Maine CDC Cardiovascular Health Program. He's their worksite health specialist. And Tom Downing, director of Maine Med's Workplace Wellness Program. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. During the break, we were talking about the whole issue of carrot and stick in terms of incentives, Tom, about, are you encouraging, should you be encouraging, offering your employees or penalizing them? Hey, your BMI is too high. Sorry, you get a zap with the electric prod, or you get a discount if you, lose 20 pounds, whatever it is. Where are we in terms of measuring the effectiveness of either approach?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting discussion because it, again, depends on your philosophy, what your goals are. I think there's also something that I always try to keep in mind when I'm working with employers, and Phil talked earlier about building teams and building cultures. At the same time, I think we need to be respectful. By that, I mean every individual has a myriad of scenarios around them, their history, all these other kinds of things. And when we start down that path of trying to put a wellness program in where we have certain goals, let's say participation as a goal, how do we incentivize people or disincentivize them? And I think it's gaining more and more traction. By that, I mean there's more and more discussion in the literature about what seems to work best. Should you incentivize for just participating, or should you incentivize for outcomes, i.e. if you accomplish a certain goal, let's say your blood pressure is normal, then you get rewarded for that. I think just fundamentally most of us would realize that people tend to be incentivized in a positive way if we're supportive of them, not tearing them down and saying you're bad because you didn't reach that outcome.
I remember very distinctly a few years ago when the cutting edge of the debate was about smoking, and that, where it was, as you were mentioning earlier, the case of the company that said, we're not going to hire any smokers. If you smoke, you may not enter these doors. And I remember in the course of that public debate, people said, well, what's next? If you're too fat, you're not going to work here. And in some ways, I mean, if you're measuring BMI and as part of your equation for for how much you charge people for premiums, we are kind of moving in that direction. Hence, some degree of cynicism about this, which you're saying can be dealt with in terms of how you whether you add something positive or take something away.
We also have, as Phil mentioned earlier, there are laws in place that protect employees.
Right, and the other part too is, and Tom was just saying you. The whole idea behind incentives are trying to meet people where they're at to help get them moving in the direction of making some positive changes. And when people, what causes, poor health is the behaviors, the things we choose to do and not to do. And so what happens is they people do things because it's important to them. And so, you know, if you're beaten on them, the likelihood of them wanting to move forward is less likely. But if you can encourage them and create an environment that helps them to get moving, they're more likely to see success in the long term.
Jeff in Stonington, hold on. We'll get to you in a moment. Right now, though, first to Norway and Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Hi, Tom. Hi, Phil. Chris. I work with these fellows from time to time, and my question today is some of the toughest cells that I have. We do local public health, and I have a foot in trying to move people towards wellness in their work sites. But some of the toughest cells that I have are people that are actually in the healthcare field. You know, the mental health workers and addiction specialists and other healthcare field people. Even myself, I find I do healthy things at home. I do sit on a ball at work, but I don't do the stretches and things that I know are very important. So I'm wondering if you have any tips to share today on how do you get people who should know better to kind of tip towards that wellness, towards some of those wellness behaviors.
Hey, Chris, it's good to hear you call in. And I look at folks, you know, nurses and social workers. You know, those folks they're out there. They're so good at helping other people. You know, and they take most of the time of their lives to really do that. And sometimes they're forgetting about themselves. And so, you know, I think from an employer standpoint, you know, I think employers who have social workers and nurses should take a hard look and, gosh, what they're doing such great work to support other people. How can we support them so that, you know, they can be healthy and live a vibrant life too?
Mm. Yeah, Tom, you work at a health facility. is what Chris is saying true or?
Oh, I think it's very much true. It's one of the. I think it's a very tough challenge. Those people, whoever they may be as healthcare providers, are very dedicated individuals and tend to focus most of their energies on the patients and individuals they work with. And I agree with you, Phil. I think what we need to do as employers is to support them, provide them with opportunity, provide them with a culture. I mean, I know one of the big initiatives at Maine Med and Maine Health right now is looking at our cafeterias and what are the kinds of choices of foods that we're providing, not only our patients and our visitors, but our employees as well. And that's been a source of a lot of discussion lately is we need to do a better job of improving those choices that they have. So I think there's multiple strategies you can use, but we'll keep coming back to this whole issue of the role of leadership. Those leaders need to be setting the tone.
Speaking of incentives, other than savings on healthcare costs or increased productivity, what are there any other incentives for employers to do this? I'm thinking tax incentives, incentives from their insurance company in the terms of lower rate. I don't know. Is there any sort of external impetus to get employers to move in this direction?
Well, there's a neat graphic. So, you know, for your listeners, you can envision this. If you think of an iceberg and what you actually see above the water is probably like maybe 30% or less of the iceberg. That, if you put that in terms of cost of health or poor health, That what you see above water is what's medical and pharmacy costs. The big chunk of it underneath the water are your sort of what they say indirect costs, so your productivity costs. And, you know, if you're looking at your medical costs and trying to figure out, gosh, how am I going to control that? So much more is happening on the productivity side than what you realize. And so, you know, it's impacting your disability. It's impacting your workers' compensation costs. It's impacting absenteeism, and as Tom was talking about presenteeism, you know, there's the indirect costs, which are a challenge to measure. They're a real cost. And so addressing employee health can make a huge impact on that and make you a more competitive business too.
Let's go to Stonington and Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Interesting show. I wanted to give a plug for ergonomic seating, and I know that it's healthy to be getting up and moving around and stretching. And we do that all day because we're furniture makers down here. But we've designed a stool. It's called the Owl Stool. And serendipitously, it's turned out to be a wonderful ergonomic support device. And we actually, it was sort of coined by a local chiropractor, was able to help us with the angle in which this seat sits at. And it's many, many people, we've sold hundreds of them, love the stool and find that they've received a great back relief. And the beauty of it is that it has postural support holes, which are holes where your ischial tuberosities would be sitting on the chair. So it's similar to a sculling seat where there's holes in the seat.
And you said it was called an owl. See, is that what it looks like, or is that what you look like when you? Oh.
It looks like an owl face.
Yeah.
So, as well as being ergonomically a very healthy seating device, it's also a very beautiful seat, and it looks like an owl because it's made of solid cherry and walnut, and they're very interesting and sculptural to look at. So I just wanted to, just share that because our customers have had great relief in sitting in these, and people who have had pain can now sit for hours and not have pain. So we've been very lucky to discover this, and I wanted to share that.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Thanks for checking in.
Jeff brings up a good point, too, because, there are organizations out there, especially worker comp groups, that can come in and do evaluations of workstations for people to make sure that are they sitting correctly at the workstation. That's something for employers to consider, too, so that people, if they are sitting for periods of time, they're set up correctly.
Yeah, we hear a lot about, carpal tunnel and obviously the issues associated with sitting for long periods of time, neck problems from having your computer at the wrong angle. Mm-hmm. But are the bigger issues, though, these chronic diseases that come from poor diet, no exercise? Is that really what we're targeting now?
When you look at the, cost of healthcare here in the United States, they're saying upwards of 75% of what we spend on is to treat chronic illness. Things like, when we say chronic illness, we're talking about diabetes. We're talking about heart disease, cancer, stroke, most of which, these four diseases in particular, are mostly lifestyle related. So the things that we're choosing to do and not to do, like be physically active, eat well, avoid tobacco, use alcohol in moderation, and manage our stress. So, those are the things that, if I could, make one plug for anybody out there, is to think about, what can you do as an individual to take charge of that, of your own health, improve your own health today? I think that's what we should all be thinking about.
All right. And with that, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us today, Philip DeRusso and Tom Downing. Philip DeRusso with Maine CDC Cardiovascular Health Program. He's the Worksite Health Specialist. Tom Downing was Director of Maine Med's Workplace Wellness Program. Today's program is produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls. Matthew Schreiber ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. Monday, we are hoping to have Senator-elect Angus King on the show. Stay tuned to MPBN for updates. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.